Just a Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather and talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. We're joined in this episode by one of the leading minds in the burgeoning space of private brands, Christopher Durham. Christopher Durham is an author, consultant, strategist, and retailer with close to 20 years of real-world retail and corporate experience creating, launching, and building billion-dollar private brands. His website, My Private Brand, seeks to drive the changing private brand landscape, focusing on the emerging art and science of private brand management. He was recently VP of Retail Brands at Theory House, a branding and retail marketing agency. Christopher is also the founder of the Vertex Awards, a global competition devoted exclusively to the art of private brand package design. Prior to all this recent success, he was private brand executive at Lowe's Home Improvement. Christopher, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
So it looks like a lot of your focus right now is your website, My Private Brand, which is at mypbrand.com. So what inspired you to start the website? So, you know, share with us the story of how you got to be this leading voice in the industry.
Oh, so, you know, I've been in private brand and retail, I don't know, for the last 15 or so years, working originally with Delhaize and their food line banner in the Southeast. Had an opportunity to move over to Lowe's Home Improvement. Got there for about a year and realized it wasn't quite where I wasn't the job I thought it was going to be. Great company, just wasn't terribly pleased with it, honestly. And decided to start writing a blog in 2008. So certainly not the beginning of the internet, but very early on for a lot of this stuff. And it just was something my wife and my mom read for a while, and we kind of fiddle with it and play with it. And eventually, early in the following year, Walmart released their redesign of Great Value, the white redesign. And I was the first to break it in the country, and it got picked up by a couple of big papers, and it all just kind of went from there. Until several years later, when the website was doing so well, I was actually able to quit Lowe's and do this full time. So I write the website full time, run the Vertex Awards, as you mentioned, and this year launched a conference as well.
Wow! So you know, to some extent, you never probably planned or envisioned where you are today. Is that correct?
Oh, no, to no extent, honestly. I mean, my wife will tell you that, you know, me sitting in the chair typing away on a blog in 2008, she could never imagine us actually making a living and doing quite well off of it. And it's turned into a good bit of consulting every year with retailers. And I mean, it's, you know, it's a wonderful time to be in business because the internet certainly enables us to do a lot of things.
Absolutely. So, you know, with your current site, which is, you know, clearly well beyond blog status at this point, you know, covering everything from fashion to home improvement to specialty to club and beyond. What is the structure of your organization, and how do you manage to, you know, produce a website with so much content and gathering of information? Could you kind of, you know, walk us through perhaps a day in the life of Christopher?
Sure. The structure of the organization is very small and very flat. So it is essentially myself. I have a editor who will edit and fill in for me on occasion and write some things. My wife actually was able to quit her job as well, and she runs all the back end, so the business side, the billing. She helps with the conference and that sort of thing. And that's really who it is. Well, I'll bring in people to help with the conference or various other things, but it's a very small organization because when they keep it lean, it just makes profitability a lot easier to do. That being said, I write every day. So there's a little more than 7,000 posts on the site at this point.
Wow.
We do about 1.5 million page views a year. So if you want to learn about private brand, you know, it's a very narrow niche and it's a very deep niche. So, but I do everything from have, you know, interviews like this to work with retailers to spend a lot of time on Google, walking stores a great deal and kind of looking to see what's happening and going on in the world, doing interviews, you know, with other people as well. So it's just, it's the new economy of the internet.
Right. And, you know, at some point, and I'm speaking towards your very, very successful event, which was actually just recently held. At some point you had to make a decision to, go back to the old economy a little bit with an in-person event. So tell us about, you know, your the PLMA and kind of the thought process and the perhaps the risks that you took in deciding to put on an event, which I've put them on in the past, and I can attest that they're no small feat of of work. Well, that, not even a small event.
Sure. The PLMA is a whole separate thing, not the different organizations. We don't want to get that confused. But in September, we produced the first, what it was essentially my private brand conference called Velocity. Rachel was there from Chef's Best. We appreciate her attendance. And the goal of the event was really to do the same thing, to bring the website to life. So it was really about pushing private brand forward. We had 15 different executives from various retailers from around the country speak. Fortunately, after doing this for 10 years, now I know lots of people and can pick up the phone. So the SVP from Walmart, Jack Pastello, was the keynote speaker on the first day. And then there were VPs and directors from Staples and Giant Eagle and all over the place, just one after the other speaking. So about 125 people for the first event. We're hoping to grow significantly next year. And yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's really just how do you bring what we've been doing on the internet and the social media site to life and begin to engage people in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, congratulations on all that success. Let's shift gears a little bit and tap into your brain and vast experience here. So share with me, attempt to summarize, let's put it this way, maybe the last 9 years, because you started your current ventures in 2008. How have private brands evolved since you began, blogging, really? How have they evolved?
Sure. So 2008, 2009, I'm sure you'll remember, was really the Great Recession. That was the beginning of it. And I went to work for a home improvement retailer, which was particularly trying for home improvement in general, not just Lowe's, but just people had basically had a ATM in their own home, right? So you could go get a second mortgage and redesign remodel your kitchen and spend $50,000. And so what? Your house is going to gain value. You didn't care, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the bottom dropped out in it, and you were still doing home improvement, but you were painting or you were just maintaining, right? So it was a completely different way of thinking. At the same time, private label really began to grow mostly as a function of the economy, right? So I just don't have enough money. I need to stretch my dollar. I'm going to try this private label stuff a little bit more. That's a little bit of an oversimplification, because really for the last 20 years, retailers have been working to make what they're doing better and bring the quality up and the prices better. So, but it certainly was the impetus to make a change. That being said, now next year will be the 10th anniversary. Really for the last 5 years, it's been pretty stagnant. The retailers got a lot better at what they were doing in 2008, 2009, and in 2010, and then it's kind of stayed even. If you look at the numbers, they've been pretty flat. The last, 2 years, even 6 months, it's just blown up. And it's blown up for a lot of reasons. But I mean, there's a lot of just macro trends around millennials and Google and Instagram, and just shopping is changing in a completely different way. Whole Foods being acquired by Amazon, Lidl opening, such that all of a sudden, retailers are scared. They don't want to die. They don't want to, fall in the heap of the retail apocalypse, as the trade magazines like to call it. So they're saying, how can we do things different? How can we give shoppers a reason to come to us? Well, the challenge is for most, particularly traditional grocers, Tide and Coke and Breyers ice cream aren't actually unique differentiators, right? I can get that anywhere, across the street, on sale any day of the week. So private brand all of a sudden becomes an important way to create new and unique things that you can only get at Kroger or Safeway or wherever the retailer is. It's an exciting time, honestly.
Mm. So it it sounds like it's just as much a, attention being placed on it by retailers as it is a shift in consumer behavior. Like, as you mentioned, the recession perhaps awakened people to private brands because, probably all of us were looking to at least save money somewhere during that time period. So that kind of was the first trial. And then there was growth and then stagnant. But then what's driving it now is retailers being threatened perhaps by online and just some of the overall changes in the industry, saying, we need to chase, we need to bring people into our stores. I would imagine that
we're online. Probably. Amazon has 30 brands.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So they're chasing the margins. I think it's probably safe to say that.
Margin is always a factor of private brand. If anybody tells you it's not, they're lying. But margin isn't the ultimate question. The ultimate question is, how do I survive? Right? Because you and I can sit here and name off retailer after retailer who have died. So if you look at, it's particularly those ones in the middle, they're just kind of undifferentiated. It's the JCPenney's kind of mid-tier thing of the world. So some of those grocers are not going to make it. Some of those convenience stores are not going to make it because they just don't provide a reason. They're either not on the low end and they're super cheap. They're not Aldi or Lidl or Family Dollar. They're not on the high end and they're providing, something more. They're, it's Wegmans or HEB or Publix or somewhere like that. Right. So those ones in the fuzzy middle, if they don't figure out how to give you a real reason to come, they're just not going to survive. We're overstored as it is. And so I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Within 3 miles of me, there's 7 grocery stores. Well, no one actually needs 7 grocery store options. They won't all survive.
Right. Let's say that one of the many rules of marketing, don't be stuck in the middle and try to be everything to everyone. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And Sears, and it's just not working anymore. Did anything happen? And I ask this out of complete naivete. Did anything happen at the supplier level that has driven, particularly in food and beverage, the recent, you just mentioned 6 to 18 month growth? Did suppliers become, supplying higher quality? Were they able to scale? There was no, I guess you'd call that upward pressure from suppliers that has helped the growth.
No, don't believe it for even a minute. Suppliers have always been able to supply anything that a retailer asked for. So any quality, from anywhere in the world, at any price, that's never been a challenge. Certainly, the manufacturing industry has changed over the last 10 years. So you get just-in-time production and smaller runs. And there's a lot of things that facilitate this sort of customization that everyone says millennials want. 30 years ago, a factory couldn't have done that to save their life. They turned it on and they ran 500,000 boxes of cereal. Today, you run 10,000 boxes of, whatever, oat and blueberry and Asahi or something, right? And then you change up a line and you run whatever other artisanal flavor there is. So I think there are bigger mega trends outside of retail that are driving a lot of that. But it's not the manufacturers are better, no.
Just perhaps a little more agile you can provide. So you've mentioned millennials twice, so we have to go there. How are millennials helping, drive any growth in private brands? Are they more or less receptive to private brands compared to national brands? What are you seeing there?
Well, here's the thing. Millennials are an easy word to use, and I'll tell people you can't really go to a conference unless you hear 10 old white guys complaining about millennials. Probably on a panel, right? Here's the thing. Millennials, as they age and as they change lifestyles, behave more and more like their parents. So as you get married, as you have children, as you get a mortgage, as you, whatever those big things are, all of a sudden your perspective changes, your budget changes, what's important to you changes. That's always been true. What we do know, however, is that millennials don't have the allegiance to many of the old school traditional brands that their parents and their grandparents have. Right. So they're buying Samsung and Apple. They're not buying Tide and Brillo. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and they're much more aware of brands that give back. So they would rather buy detergent for their baby from the Honest Company than they would from the big bad Tide. Mm. And it's not that P&G is necessarily bad. It's just their perspective on the world or millennials' perspective on the world is different.
Sure.
Right. So they'd rather have a $95 pair of glasses from Warby Parker or a pair of shoes from Tom's that gives back.
So shifting into the private brands overall, what marketing strategies are you seeing, and perhaps we can be specific, that are working for private brands in food and beverage right now?
Well, it's interesting. So going towards the give back, just to pick that up, there's grocers like Hy-Vee in the Midwest who have some really interesting programs. They have a private brand called Hy-Vee One that has about a dozen products in it. But each one of the products, when you buy them, give back to a cause. So if you buy Hy-Vee private brand water, it's giving back to having clean water in Africa. Or that may not be correct, but somewhere in the third world. If you buy Hy-Vee private brand potatoes, you're building houses. And it's a very clear marketing strategy, and they're stating it. And that's kind of cool. It's kind of exciting, right? They're all high volume items. The other side of it is retailers are figuring out, just on their regular private brands, how to better use their own stores. Such that it used to be private brands were either on the bottom of the shelf or on the left, and it was really only a price play. Now you can be someone like Stop and Shop, who will do their limited edition lines, and it's a seasonal line of limoncello flavored products that are on an end cap for 6-8 weeks. The next season it'll be bacon maple products. The next week it'll be sriracha or whatever the flavor is. And they're using it to drive interest. And it only comes back to Stop and Shop. And if it's successful, they'll bring it back the next year. So all kinds of cool things. You also see, right now, Publix and Food Lion and a number of other Aldi are really using their private brands in their TV commercials to push their difference and really say, come to us because you can only get it here at a great price.
Wow. So they're, in some ways adopting the strategies that national brands have taken for years. Where are private brands, again, sticking with food and beverage if we can, for this podcast, where are they facing challenges? What hurdles do private brands still need to overcome? And I'll perhaps set it up from one observation that I've noticed, which is, I don't know, you would know better than me, but it seems like maybe 6-7 years ago, private brands, for the most part, maintained the name of the store. So it was, the Kroger brand of spaghetti sauce or the Safeway brand. Whereas I've seen them now shift into whether it was Private Selection or you have Target with their Archer Farms, taking that approach to really create their own brand, to the extent that it can be even difficult for consumers to recognize that it is a private brand, which I'm sure is somewhat intentional. But what other challenges are facing, whether they're challenges?
Sure, let's talk about that for a second though. So the reality of most grocers is they own between 8 and 20 brands. And they have for the last 20 or 30 years. A Walmart and a Target own between 50 and 100 brands. Okay. They are basically acting as multinational conglomerate brand owners in the exact same way that Unilever or P&G or anyone else would. And what we know, and I've seen reams upon reams of research, is the vast majority of customers don't know who owns brands and they don't care. It's a distinction created by manufacturers, not by customers. So when you talk about it, if we really started peeling back the onion, if you've ever seen, usually on Facebook or LinkedIn, there's a big chart that shows you that there are 5 or 6 big manufacturers or big companies in the world that own 2/3 of the brands. Burt's Bees is owned by Clorox and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Retailers have the right to own brands. So the whole conversation really is shifting. And it's all an internal inside baseball shift, right? It's not that customers care because they don't. Customers don't know who owns anything. Right. So it's just for retailers a way of saying we have to own brands because it's what can help us and makes us different. And honestly, it brings value to our bottom line. It makes our stock more valuable. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different thing. Now, where they're having issues is not really issues. It's really more the challenges of grocery today are that the center store is shrinking in many, many categories. So my 12-year-old or my 13-year-old daughter does not care about canned soup. They, by and large, don't care about packaged cereal. And there are many other categories that are struggling, right? They also, private labels will also have challenges where there's a lot of innovation in a category. So where, you know, manufacturers or brands are spending a lot of money to create new and interesting things, it's a bigger challenge for a private brand to play in. That being said, those categories are few and far between.
So as of, you mentioned, perhaps, well, we can, let's look at all the aisles and the outside as well. Two-part question. What, sure. Approximately what percent of the grocery store revenue is private brands right now? And then where do you see that heading over the next, let's say, 2 to 5 years?
Sure. So most U.S. groceries will sit around the 20% range. Might be a little higher, might be a little lower. It might be Trader Joe's or Aldi, and it's basically 100%, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
What we know, though, over the next, gosh, 5, 10, 20 years, you name it, potential for private brands, there's really no stopping. So as retailers become more brands themselves, there's no reason they couldn't be 100% private brand. So prior to the Whole Foods acquisition by Amazon, I would have said Whole Foods should just go all Whole Foods branded. Because when you interview people and you talk about Whole Foods as a brand itself has equity. People walk into Whole Foods and they believe. You don't really need to have anything else. Yeah, there are all kinds of little niche kind of natural and organic brands, but most people have never heard of the vast majority of those brands. So Whole Foods carries more equity than some little brand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The more exciting question is, who are the retailers that are going to be created today? So if we go ahead and say some of the mid-tiers are going to die, and I believe they will, who are the, you know, the guy from Warby Parker and the guy from Harry's say, let's start a grocery store. Mm-hmm. What does it look like and what does it carry? Well, you assume it doesn't look anything like what Kroger or Safeway is doing, right? And if you look at things like Brandless or Boxed or even Jet now, Brandless is 100% private brand. Yeah, all online. Mm-hmm. There's no reason that the stores of the future couldn't say, I don't need national brands at all. So really, it's just the transition of those big boxes. We still have to figure it out.
So somewhere out there is this kind of peak private brand. And from what I'm hearing, you're saying it's, you know, I don't think that you're saying the demise of the national brands is directly around the corner, but, you know, certainly suggesting that it's possible that, private brands could not just go from 20% of the store to 51% of the store, but that more and more stores could be,
sure.
private brands, just as Trader Joe's is, that could be the future.
Absolutely. It could be. Right. Absolutely. I mean, think about the outliers. Think about IKEA, right? So IKEA is 100% IKEA branded. Now you can call that a national brand. You can call it a private brand. It doesn't really matter. They're a retailer that owns the brand IKEA. They only sell IKEA things. They also, if you ever shopped in IKEA, you go downstairs, you go into the front of the store as you're leaving, and there's an entire IKEA branded grocery set there. We don't think that college age mom, you know, girl or the mom who's setting up her first house isn't also buying stuff there. They are. Right? So they're experiencing brands in a completely different way. It's not that national brands die. It's that the definition of a national brand, which was basically created in the after World War II, is just incorrect anymore.
Mm.
So it's not about who manufactures it. That I have no doubt of, because if you own an Apple, you can pull your Apple phone out, look at the back, it says designed in Cupertino, made in China. Apple makes nothing. All right, think about that for a second. Apple, one of the biggest brands in the world, if not the biggest, makes nothing. Mm-hmm. They are a design and development company and a marketing company. Okay, so it's not about what you make. You know, we see food recalls all the time. There was just one the other day of water for babies. That's like 5 brands and 14 private brands are all made in the same place. Right? See, peanut butter, you see pet food, it doesn't matter. So they're all outsourcing their manufacturing. So that's not what makes you a brand. So then the question is, what makes you a national brand? Well, if you and I had full distribution on a small food brand in Kroger, we'd pat ourselves on the back. We'd have a nice little house in the Bahamas, and we'd say we have a national brand, right? Well, they have national distribution. They're a national brand.
So I'm going to want to ask you about your new book in a moment, but before I do that, I'd be remiss to not at least tap into your knowledge of Beyond Food and Beverage. So, you know, what space is exploding right now that perhaps, you know, folks that are, you know, focused on food and beverage might not be realizing and understanding?
Sure.
Drug, beauty, fashion. What are you seeing that's really exciting you?
I mean, I'll tell you that I think the most exciting space right now for in general for consumers and for private brands is pet. Mm. So the whole shift from, you know, you own a pet to being a pet parent and the humanization of pet is huge. And what it's done is it's made Americans think about pets in a completely different way. It also means they shop in a different way. So they now expect a pet food to be the exact same quality as the food they're buying for their children. They now expect pet fashion to be the same. So if you go into any specialty pet store or a big box or Kroger or PetSmart or Petco, those lines are just blowing up. And I think by and large, the big stores, you know, they own it anyway, but it's exciting and it's changing the way people are thinking about the business.
Mm-hmm. There is literally a pet food store down the street from me that sells, you know, real food, you know, fresh whole food for dogs. I'm not a dog. I wouldn't even say owner, because as you said, that, you know, the humanization of pets, owner is probably not the right. So we don't have a dog in our family. But yeah, if you go in this store, it's food. You walk out of there with a bowl of food for your dog. So
and it's probably 15 or 20 times more expensive than the, you know, old bag of Purina.
I imagine it is. I imagine it is. So before we let you go, Christopher, tell me about your new book, Vanguard Vintage Originals, and your inspiration behind it and where listeners can get it.
Awesome. So the new book, Vanguard Vintage Originals, is really, to use a Star Wars term, a prequel to my last book. So I did a book 3 years ago called 52, The My Private Brand Project, which was a series of posts. I did one a week that, on what I believed were the best private brands in the U.S. at the time, with some beautiful photography by a photographer out of Cincinnati, Terry Campbell. And just the book was a roaring success, with on the bestseller list for package design, this little kind of niche of Amazon for a number of weeks. As I was doing that, also, I'm a bit of a package design and private brand junkie, as you can imagine. It's easy to discover. There's a lot of vintage private brand floating around on eBay. So I just started buying a piece here that going, hey, this is kind of cool. And honestly, none of it's terribly expensive. It's $1, $5, $10. You know, that's these old spice cans and coffee cans and beer and cereal and you name it. I had about, I don't know, 20 or 30 pieces just kind of sitting on a shelf after a couple of months, and realized, number one, there was probably a book here. And number two, the history of private brand goes back much further than the traditional story would have you believe. So, you know, the traditional story is, it all kind of came out of the 70s and that white beer can that says, or cigarettes, or beer, or cereal, or whatever. When you really started looking at the stuff I was collecting, it honestly went back to the early 1800s. To retailers like the Walgreens and the A&Ps of the world, who were contemporaries of most of these national brands. So there wasn't that Walgreens didn't sell P&G. P&G only made soap at the time, and they weren't a national brand. Walgreens was selling mostly Walgreens product because there was really no other option.
Interesting.
Right? They just, it was just the right product for them. Sears the same way. So 125 different packages later, I worked with Terry again to basically tell this story of private brand that went from the very first piece I have is 1819 from Macy's. It's a stone jug about the size of a gallon of milk that held whiskey, up to a pair of jeans from the original Levi Strauss store. So remember, Levi Strauss was actually a dry goods store. And this guy comes in and says, hey, I got an idea to make some pants a little better. We'll put a rivet on it. And they just sold them in the store. So it grew from there to be a huge brand, but it was a private brand originally. All the way through a lot of A&P, 8 O'Clock Coffee, a TRS-80 at Radio Shack, and just all the way up basically to generic. So the book ends at the generic period with about 30 different versions of generic packaging. So pretty cool. It's available on Amazon, and it's doing pretty well right now. So please buy.
Awesome. Outstanding. Well, I want to let you go. You've been generous with your time today with us. I certainly invite any listener to visit and follow mypbrand.com. As you mentioned, there's some 9,000 plus pieces of content. I believe it. It's a very dense website. And there you can undoubtedly find information on the next Velocity Conference, which was in September. Yeah, so it'll be next September as well in Charlotte. Is that safe to say?
Yep, 17th, 18th, and 19th.
Awesome.
In Charlotte.
Super. Well, congratulations on building what is turned out to be a little bit of a media empire here for you, and providing a really valuable resource in an area that's not just growing and important for companies, but I think that it's important for consumers as well to have alternatives and options. So you're, I think, doing a service for the entire industry and consumer side as well. So congratulations on all that success, and thank you for joining us, Christopher.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.